Slummy back from the dead here at 700. I'll tell you. I mean, honestly, a little gastroenteritis going on there, some other things. I don't want to bore you with the details, but back and ready to go this morning on a gray Friday, but a Friday nonetheless, and a sad one, too, because of the spate. And if you look at FBI statistics, certainly the number of mass shootings in this country is on an upward trajectory. No one at all wants to see that. We had, of course, the shooting on Wednesday, and 12 people dead there at the hands of a Marine who may have suffered from PTSD in Southern California. John Lott is a world-recognized expert on guns and crime, president of Crime Prevention Research Center, top-selling author, of course, the classic More Guns, Less Crime and the War on Guns. And he joins me now to talk about it on 700 WLW. Doc, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Yeah, well, I am. It's kind of a sad day in a sense. It seems like it's always a sad day. We've had shooting after shooting. We've now had three of those in 2 weeks, and many other smaller episodes like this as well. I guess from a global perspective, if you pull back and look at it, are we in an age right now? Certainly, we're seeing an increase in the number of mass shootings, but how does one explain it in something that can make sense to us? Why we're seeing a rash of all this now in American history?
Right. Well, we're not seeing a rash right now compared to the past. I mean, the FBI report that you're talking about was looking at something called active shootings. And those include cases where a gun's fired in public and nobody is killed. And the problem is how they put that together. They used Google News searches to put that together. And the problem is, when you're using Google News search, stories fall out over time. And so if you do a search, you may find a story now, but if you do it 5 years after the event, there's a chance that you won't find it there. And the problem is that, you know, so if I'm looking at cases where four people have been killed, let's say, you're going to find a lot of stories on that, right, whether you look at it now or, you know, 5 years from now. You may find half as many, but you'll still find stories on it. But if you're looking at cases where a gun's fired in public and nobody's killed, there may only be one story on that if you're lucky to get even that. And so looking at it 5 years later or 10 years later, it's likely not to be there. And 75% of their cases where guns were fired in public where nobody was shot were just in the last few years of the time period that they looked at. So it's really, I mean, it's unbelievable that the FBI study would use something like Google News searches to go and do the report that they did. But it's really a heavily flawed, okay. I mean, there are other problems I can mention too.
Sure. But, let me start. So what you're saying basically is this. Well, we live in a land of the 320 million people. If you looked at every man, woman, and child pretty much has a gun, statistically speaking, if you look at the numbers of guns, or maybe even more than that, if you look at the number of guns that are out there. Well, at this day and age, we have a huge population, but we also have more guns than ever before. And what you're saying is that based on the numbers and based on the hands that they're in, that as a percentage, there are fewer of these mass shootings than we're led to believe by watching the daily news cycle.
I'm just saying it hasn't really changed. If you look at the late 90s, for example, 1999 had virtually the same number of mass public shootings as we have today. I'm not saying that's good. I'm just saying that, you know, it's kind of a false impression there. And also, the rest of the world not only has a much higher rate of mass public shootings than we have here in the United States, but they're increasing at a significantly faster rate of mass public shootings. We just don't hear about those stories. I mean, just a couple weeks ago, you had this mass public shooting in Crimea where 20 people were killed at a college by a student. You know, those types of things happen regularly around the rest of the world. We just rarely get coverage here in the United States of those types of events when they happen.
Dr. John Lotz on the show, national columnist, top-selling author, and putting in perspective the most recent mass shooting, of course, the one in California, leaving 12 dead, 10 injured, and the gunman dead himself. And I think another component to this, and I want to get to the gun-free zone in a second because I think that's a huge thing, but you know, as a responsible gun owner, and you hear that, as we've been vilified, if you own a gun, you're a bad person, you shouldn't have one, you don't need one, why do you want one, et cetera, et cetera, is the fact that you're not going to change the Constitution. And so many people believe that, well, you know what, if we can get just X number of people elected, this is going to, it's not going to happen, it's never going to happen. So we've got to figure out a way to try and maybe mitigate this. Now, this guy, this Marine, allegedly had some issues with post-traumatic stress disorder, and so that would preclude him from owning a gun in the first place. In a perfect world, how do we solve that issue so that people who don't have a mental disorder can get a weapon and those who are diagnosed or have issues, John, can get some help and be prevented and precluded from getting their hands on a device like this?
Right. Well, it's very, very hard to identify these individuals beforehand. There's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking that goes on that says, well, he showed certain signs and it should have been obvious. People would... mental illness generally are less violent than the rest of the population, and they're also more likely to be victims of violent crime than the rest of the population. You know, in this case, this individual was actually seen by a psychiatrist before the attack. That's not unusual. About 60% of the mass public shooters over the last 20 years were seeing mental health care experts, either psychiatrists or psychologists, shortly before their attacks. And there's not one single case where somebody had recently seen a psychiatrist or a psychologist where the individual was identified as a danger to themselves or others. You know, there's a whole academic literature in psychology and psychiatry about their inability to identify these individuals. So, you know, take something like schizophrenia. You have about 2.5 million people that have schizophrenia. Over the last 20 years, you have two people that to some degree had symptoms of schizophrenia. But, you know, to have two people over that period of time, if you're an expert in looking at these individuals, you know, it's very hard to identify them. And, and the other problem that you have is just stopping somebody from getting a weapon. I mean, if you really believe somebody has mental illness, then you should lock them up. I mean, the notion that you're going to say, I'm not going to let you legally buy a gun, just isn't serious. I mean, most people who illegally obtain guns get them from drug dealers. And let me ask you a question. If I were to say, okay, you can't go and get illegal drugs, I mean, does that stop people from getting illegal drugs?
No question, it doesn't. Can't do it.
And if the same source, because these drug dealers have guns, you know, just to protect their own valuable property that they have, you know, why do people believe you're going to be any more likely to stop them from getting weapons than you are stop people from getting illegal drugs?
Well, the other element of this, too, Dr. John Lott, is it's, you know, it's a constitutional issue. It's a civil rights issue to a large degree, right? If we said this about guns, like, all right, well, we need to put a limit on this, too, because we're getting people who are disturbed, mentally ill with guns. We got to make it harder for people to get these things, more difficult for them to exercise their constitutional right. I would then turn around and go, well, if you started, I wonder how many people who are against profiling have no problem doing that when it comes to guns, is what I'm saying, is that if you look at the pattern of behavior, let's say you could, you know, you could drill down and look on urban areas and be biased against people of a certain skin color because of what they're doing, whether it's Hispanics, African American, whatever it might be, and you can look at some numbers and go, okay, we got to do something to prevent this. People would be outraged, and yet there's a component of people out there that believe that is okay when it comes to people who own weapons. It's the same thing.
Right. Well, I guess the point I was trying to make before is that you have a lot of people that have different levels of mental illness, and a lot of them are victims of violent crime. And these individuals as a whole are less likely to be, you know, violent themselves and more likely to be victims of violent crime. And so, you know, you have to be careful here that you don't end up hurting the very people who are very vulnerable. you know, just saying, well, you have some degree of mental illness, and so we're going to ban you from being able to go and protect yourself in that case. I mean, it'd be nice if we lived in a perfect world where there wasn't violence against these people. Here's my bottom line, and that is you can spend more money on mental illness, you know, that's maybe valuable in any case. But the problem is if you can't be sure you're going to identify these individuals, and there's good reason to believe that we're not very good, psychiatrists and psychologists will tell you themselves they're not very good at all in identifying these individuals beforehand. What's your backup plan? And that gets to something that you were raising before, and that is these gun-free zones. I don't know at what point people begin to acknowledge that virtually all these mass public shootings, you know, you mentioned the ones recently, every single one of those occur, whether it's a synagogue or whether it's this attack in California. California banned people having permanent concealed handguns in places that get most of their revenue from alcohol.
Right.
It's right on your license there when you apply for it. And
yet the shooting in Southern California happened where? At a gun-free zone, a place that was alcohol, sir.
Right, exactly. And you read the diaries that these killers leave behind or other statements, and they may be crazy in some sense, but they're not stupid. They want to kill as many people as possible. And they know that if they go to a place where people aren't able to go and defend themselves, they're going to be able to go and kill more people. They didn't even have a guard there with a gun. But let's say they had. Having somebody who's readily identifiable as a guard, whether he's in uniform or not, but if he's readily identifiable, he's going to be the first person that's killed.
Yeah.
You know, you go and have the officer heroically run into the room there. You have somebody in a uniform. It's like having a neon sign above them that says, shoot me first. You know, these killers know that if they kill the person, the one person in uniform who has a gun, then they essentially have free rein to go and kill others. And so, you know, we talk about school shootings. We talk about the synagogue shooting. If you had had one armed guard there, it's not a great solution because it's easy. That these killers have huge strategic advantages because they choose the time and the place to go and engage in the attack. The benefit that you get from concealed carry is you take away that strategic advantage that these killers have. They don't know who it is that they have to go and take out first.
Yeah.
And in fact, it makes even the job for these guards much safer, because if somebody goes and tries to kill one of these guards, then they identify themselves, they make themselves public, and it means that somebody, they have to worry about somebody behind them or to the side who might have a gun, who might be able to go and stop them at that point. So it makes it riskier for them to go and even shoot the guard.
Well, if you look at it in this example, I mean, you had veteran law enforcement officers there. A guy sadly lost his life. I think it was like a day or two from retirement. The officers put their bodies in front of the shooter to help shield them, too. But these were guys who were known and obviously identifiable because it was a deterrent. Hey, it's a uniformed police officer who's doing this detail in order to show a force and say, listen, we've got police officers here. Don't act out. But, you know, at that time, that makes them also easy targets because they're identified. They stand out in the crowd as opposed to blending in.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I get what you're saying in all these attacks. Synagogue, what happened in Southern California, all of these things have one thing in common, and that's a gun-free area as well. At what point, though, do we realize...
In Ohio, you can carry your permit concealed gun almost any place. You know, if these were written, and that's true in other right-to-carry states like Pennsylvania. You know, if these were random attacks, then, you know, 98% or so of these mass public shootings would take place in areas where guns are allowed. Instead, they keep on taking place in those tiny areas where guns aren't allowed. I mean, that's not random.
Yeah.
You know, if you can go and carry your gun 98%, you know, you go to most movie theaters, you can carry it, the restaurants, you know, grocery stores, other places.
Go to church, you know, stay in a church, yeah.
Right, church. And yet, it keeps on occurring in those tiny areas where people are allowed to carry. At some point, you have to ask, you know, why isn't this obvious? I mean, if you have so many statements from these killers, whether it be the Charleston church shooter, you know, others that we could go through where they just explicitly have made statements about what the Aurora Batman movie theater shooter, others made explicit statements about why they chose the targets that they did, and they had turned down other targets precisely because they were worried that there might be somebody there with a gun who could stop them before they could kill. They, you know, you have to go, these individuals want to commit suicide, but they want to commit suicide in a way that's going to get them attention. They know the more people they kill, the more media attention they get. You know, you look at something like the Sandy Hook killer. This person had put together what the police termed a doctoral dissertation. He looked at mass public shootings over a 40-year period, gotten detailed information on each mass public shooting, and had graphed out the relationship between the number of people killed and the amount of media coverage. And he had basically proved to himself that the more people he killed, the more media coverage they get. And I'm not going out and saying we should go and ban the First Amendment and rewrite it so that these guys can't get media coverage. I think that would be wrong. But, you know, the notion is that you have to take away these people's goal. The Sandy Hook killer wanted to kill more people than the Norway killer because at that point the guy had killed 67 people, wounded 110 others, ignoring the bombing deaths. And he wanted to get more news coverage, worldwide news coverage, than the Norway killer.
There's a huge element, and I think social media and our lives feed into this, the narcissistic element to that, and that is that's a question there that probably we'll have to save for another time. Dr. John Lott, of course, author of the classic More Guns, Less Crime, new on War on Guns, too, as well. Doc, thanks again for the input, as always, and the perspective. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
6 minutes away from news at 700 WLW. Driving in this morning, having a little tea because